all of the information, everything. It's comprehensive, folks. It's everything from the biosphere to controlling your water to controlling the air that we breathe. Everything, it's all about control. It's about, you know, eliminating anything that they don't think is sustainable. And anything that we do in a free society isn't sustainable, unfortunately. But folks, that's just why state and local government, because all these things that are in Agenda 21 that Chris always talks about are being implemented on a state and local level. And this is why we're talking to Roger Mundy today, because we're talking about how we can work with state representatives, state legislators, and make a difference and enact change. And it only takes a handful of people to actually be concerned and to go down there and to put pressure on these people. And many times, Roger, they just kind of go along to get along, don't they?
Oh, yeah. One thing I suggested to a state legislator was you could follow California's lead, and they limited the number of bills that each legislator could introduce each year. I said, there's no way you can do justice to 3,000 bills. You could limit the length, you could limit the number. And that'd be a great reform. But, you know, what I think is more important is to remember that, yes, these are ambitious people in the state legislature, and they want to be leaders, but they don't know where they're going. But most of them are well-intended people. And one thing to teach them is about their oath of office. Now, I know they don't take proper oaths, and there is a procedure they don't follow, so forth. It's all a legalistic dodge, but one thing to point out is it's required that you take an oath to support the Constitution. Now, you need to know what support means. And what it is, this is a pledge upon your conscience sworn to God. And if you will look up the antonym to support in Roget's Thesaurus, for example, you will see that the antonym is uncertainty. So that means if you take an oath to support the Constitution, you have no authority to vote for anything that you are not certain is constitutional. That would be an immense step forward. And you have a from your constituents this instruction: you will not vote for anything that you are not certain is constitutional.
And that requires reading the bills.
You have to read the bill and you have to read the Constitution.
Yeah, how do you know if it's not constitutional when you don't read the bill?
Right. You got to read the bill. That's the one thing I told we got big enough in this state. Todd T. Hart told the newspapers he was working with us, and in one way he was. But I told him certain things. I said, no, Todd, here's something that we insist upon. That you vote, you only vote on those bills that you've read and understand. And if you can't understand any of them, you can't read any of them, you can't vote on them. And since then, it's, you know, relationship has deteriorated. But just a small group I was in is influential enough to get the, now he's a majority whip in Congress, to go public and say he's working with us. So that's how much you can do. And that's just the beginning. If we didn't understand this certain principles, like the principle of instruction, and one thing that is important to get across, there are two steps to instruction. One is popular instruction. The Kansas Bill of Rights, for example, guarantees that people have that right. And it has never been litigated in court because it is above the jurisdiction of any court. It is the power of the popular sentiment. It is the founding power of the people over their representatives. And is guaranteed in Article 3, Section 3 in the Kansas Bill of Rights. The people can assemble in a peaceful manner, consult for the common good, and instruct their representatives. So, that means command them. And Thomas Jefferson talked about, what do you do about bad legislation? The question put to him. And he said, he considered three options. One was going to the court, to the courts. One was a constitutional amendment, but he recommended above both those instructing your representative to repeal the onerous act. And that, you know, the Kentucky resolution was an instruction from a state to a U.S. senator, and so is the Virginia resolution. So there are two stages. One is the popular instruction of local representatives. And the other, the great and powerful one, that is the defining power of a union member in the United States, and that is the power of the state legislature, guaranteed by the only clause in the entire Constitution that cannot be amended, to the power of controlling everything the U.S. senators from their states do in Congress. So the people in assembly instruct their state legislatures, you're going to issue this instruction to these U.S. senators, or we'll recall you. And if they don't like it, and they buck it, or if you have people pressuring you, you say, I have no choice. My constituents instructed me. And if you don't like it, you got to go talk to them. And this is what we did. We invited them to do this. We had some result. They watered it down. They requested that the representatives from Congress come and stand before the state legislature and answer some questions. But if we'd been more organized, there'd been more of us, if we were more knowledgeable, like can happen now, we could have compelled the state legislature to use its guaranteed constitutional power to make the U.S. senators from our state do the will of the people. And, you know, what's interesting, I've got books here that talk about the U.S. Senate when this used to go on. It went on for 100 years in this country. And the U.S. Senate was described as a somewhat hollow honor. Men would resign the Senate to go take a mayor, a position as a mayor over a city because he had more power.
Wow.
Can you imagine that?
No, I can't, but I like it.
The House had more power than the Senate, because it was harder for the people to organize and instruct their representatives on what to do than it was for a state legislature to do it. And it would be proper for the states to elect U.S. senators, but that does not affect the power of the state legislature to instruct those senators, because the only way the 17th Amendment can be considered valid is if it did not change that one power that cannot be changed and that no amendment can touch in Article 5. So, research that and you will see that if the people organize to instruct their legislatures, and if they're burnt bad enough, they will, then they need to understand that though the state legislature has the power to control their representatives in the U.S. Senate. Enough states, we've decentralized the power. And we once again have an obedient government. But I know of no other power great enough to do this. And it's undeniably constitutional. What's interesting, too, is lawyers and judges will scream, no, no, it's not, so on. But what was it? It was a southern state. What was it? Tennessee. One day, one weekend, they announced, they didn't announce it, but some DJ, some intrepid radio man like you, let the word out the state legislature had convened a session of itself.
I got that article in front of me here.
Yeah, which state was that?
It says Tennessee. It's Tennessee legislature backed down. It says Tennessean stage tax revolt. Massive revolt at state capitol stops new income tax plan. It says police cars blockaded Tennessee. This is from let me see what date that was. This is back a while.
Yeah.
Oh, it's June 14th of 2000. Police cars blockaded Tennessee state capitol entrances and troopers patrolled legislative hallways this week as the state legislature found itself under siege by thousands of angry taxpayers upset at a plan to implement a state income tax.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee is currently one of only nine states without a state income tax. Opponents of the measure, which would assess a 5% tax on any income above $100,000, are skeptical that legislators would maintain that high an exemption threshold for very long. It says as protesters began to gather outside the legislative chambers Monday evening, several legislators were taken away by ambulance and hospitalized for blood pressure and heart problems as tensions rose and tempers flared. It says by Tuesday morning, tax protesters were brandishing signs reading, let's send them all to the ER.
There you go. And see, the people in that state didn't know that they were exercising their power of instruction. But the instruction was loud and clear.
Yes.
No, you won't. And the lawyers say, and the courts say, they don't even, in that southern state that was raped by Lincoln and by the Reconstruction Congress later, supposedly the people don't even have the right of redress. Because they are a conquered people. But the people didn't know that. And if you ask them, the Tennesseans would say, we are not a conquered people. And if they knew the principle, they would say, we instructed them that they cannot do that, and they didn't. So all the laws and all the courts and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again, but the people can.
That's good. I like that. Well, it comes down to realizing that government doesn't give us our rights. Our rights are God-given, and therefore it's up to us to exercise those rights and not to look to government to relinquish their control.
That's right. And the thing is, in order for us to be the people, to be the government, which you've heard so often, we have to govern. And we have to give our servants the commands they need to do their job properly. It's that simple. If we don't do it, then all these demons are going to do it. All these self-centered, greedy, globalistic, communistic, socialistic, Satanist, whatever nutty place they're in, will be doing that. And, you know, the Civil War was a great and terrible event. And people say that all this states' rights stuff was settled at Appomattox. Well, it ain't over till it's over, and as long as people are alive and there's something called the United States in these states, it ain't over. And we can correct that crime. And we should come to understand some of these history because it gives us ammunition. But more important than that, we need to know the simple things, our political powers. So you may have all these rights, but what matters the most is if you have the power to protect them, and that's political rights. You need to know your political rights, and that includes, like, the vote and the jury, so forth. The most important is the right to command your representative. or he won't get his credentials, or he'll be recalled, and or he'll just be have a heart attack as you surround the state capitol with thousands of people in their cars honking their horns, even though you don't have any rights according to that criminal, that crime called the law, the interpretation that they don't have any rights, they're a conquered people. Nonsense. They're only conquered if they say they're conquered. And it doesn't matter what they say, the final arbiter of the Constitution is not the Supreme Court, it is the people. I was on one radio show with the state legislature, and we were talking about that, and he goes, well, what the Supreme Court says, the Constitution says, the Constitution says. And I said, excuse me? What the people say, the Constitution says, that's what the Constitution says. He said, well, I can't agree with that. I said, well, you're in the Brotherhood of Lawyers. But if everybody in America said the Constitution required you to put your underwear on your head, you'd do it.
Yep.
Because they'd have common law juries to make you do it. So that's the only hope that I can see. But it's not even hard. It's not hard to understand. It is a burden. It's like a cross you have to bear to be free. That's the cost of freedom.
You know, I remember seeing back at the time, shortly after September 11th, here in the state of Michigan, we launched a section on the website called the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act. It came to be encompassing a lot more than just that one piece of legislation, because that one piece of legislation was being implemented in all the states, but also there was a whole package of so-called anti-terror bills, which did a lot of really nasty stuff in terms of liberties. And I remember seeing in our own legislature, and I would go into some of the other states as well, a lot of these bills were worded very closely together. It was clear to see that these were not bills that were written by the individual legislators in all 50 several states.
Right.
They were written by some think tank somewhere and introduced by the state legislators. But one thing that struck me whenever I see a bill from Michigan, and I think they still do this to this day, they say the people of the state of Michigan enact. And,
uh-huh.
and then they go on to describe what the bill's about, what's being enacted upon the passage of the bill. They always do it in the name of the people of the state.
Yes. They do it in your name. So,
take away your freedom in your own name.
Right. They cannot escape the fact that the authority derives from the people. And if the people say, that is not in our name, and people reject it. The state legislators live amongst us, and they're neighbors, and they can be talked to, and they can be reached at home and in the office. And most of them believe that they have been legitimately elected. That's an interesting corruption, the corruption of the ballot, because it's a need-to-know basis, usually, where we have no way of knowing how many have been scammed into office. We have no way of verifying it. But most state legislators think they got elected.
And with the computerized voting thing that they're trying to get passed right now, you know, our days may very well be numbered in terms of any honest elections. I mean, as I understand it, everything from dog catcher to president would be controlled, or could be potentially controlled.
Right.
So, but even then, even if that happened, which it hasn't yet, in certain places they're trying it out, but we still have the power to instruct, don't we?
That's right. And the thing is about it, the reason why you vote for someone you think is the best is because of what you think he may do. And that's the real reason. You think, well, he's more trustworthy. He won't hurt us. He'll try to be fair, so on and so on. It's because of what you think he'll do. But it really doesn't matter who's in there if you can control what he does. And that is what a servant is. You know, the state legislature passes these bills and these so-called laws or statutes that control what the police do. And when the government dispatches ambassadors overseas, they control what they do. And it shouldn't horrify the people to think that that is, in fact, the true path to true representation and true self-government, is to issue commands to your legislature and from the people in assembly. And the thing is about it, here's the other side of the coin. Say you have a good man, a Charles Lindbergh Sr., or a Clifton McFadden, or maybe Ron Paul. You know, you have a good man, and you send him up to Congress or your state legislature, and then you go about your merry way. You have sent a good man into the lion's den. You owe him. If you believe he's a good man, especially, you have a moral obligation to support him. And the strongest support you can give is to make your will expressly clear under a command that that he'll be recalled, that he has no choice on this issue. Because then when all the evil people come around to try to influence him one way or the other, he's got an easy defense. I can't do anything else. I'd love to. I think you're right, but my option is resignation or recall. And that's the way the people rule. And it actually, what it does, it can put moral backbone in our legislators, especially if they're good people. They can say, my constituents have forbidden it. It doesn't even matter. They did deliberate the issue, and they are dead set against it, and I cannot do it. That's supporting your legislature. So instruction does both. It makes good servants out of bad people, and it puts moral backbone into good men who are in the legislature and the support they need. Because if you have a whole constituency adamant on one thing, like that income tax in Tennessee, then the enemy realizes even if he bumps off that legislature, the next one will be under the same constraints. And they'll have to pull a one step backward, like Lenin, say one step backward, two forward. With instruction, we can get them one step backward, then one step backward, then one step, and they'll be in a dead run going the other way.
So, I like that.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the situation with our federal, our national forests? You know, the federal government is swallowing up more and more land. Obviously, the state legislature could do something about that.
Yes, indeed. In fact, national forests are unconstitutional. And there are lots of studies that show that under the management of the federal government, they suffer. They're in way worse shape. There is only constitutional authority for the government, for the federal government, to take land for fortresses and needful buildings. Nowhere is there anywhere for them to take monuments and forests. I think this came in through Teddy Roosevelt. Now, locally controlled, if you want to have forests set aside, locally controlled forests are better managed to begin with. So the people can tell their states to say no. And
what do you do about the land that's already quote unquote owned by the federal government?
Well, what you do is probably take a wider instruction movement, but if the people, since the people are the final arbiter of the Constitution, come to the realization that it is unconstitutional for the federal government to have any land except for needful buildings outside of a 10-square-mile area, state by state en masse instructs their U.S. senators to pass bills to rescind that and return it to the states. It's because U.S. senators under instruction from enough states, you will vote on nothing unless this is done. You will not vote on the budget. You will vote against all budgets. You will paralyze the federal government until they do this. That's the kind of power states can have, because if the states came to realize the power over the U.S. Senate, they could lock that federal government down so it couldn't do anything. They could go that far, but they wouldn't even need to go that far. You just get the legislation through to return it to the states and the people where it rightfully belongs. Okay.
Sounds excellent to me. Folks, if you got any questions for Roger, I encourage you. I haven't thrown the number out very much. We still have another 35 minutes left of the broadcast minus the commercial break, which is coming up shortly. But the number is 1-800-858-6582 if you want to call in and ask how do we get started. Any questions that you might have for Roger. Here's an experienced guy. He's experienced in dealing with state representatives, state senators, and this is very important, folks. This is one of the few avenues that we have left to preserve what freedom we have and to get back the freedom that we've lost. And this is also an avenue that's largely ignored, isn't it, Roger, by a lot of the people who are very well funded.
Yes, indeed.
They promote all the time calling your federal congressman. They promote all the. In fact, in the piece that I was reading a moment ago, and I'm not saying that these people who put this out weren't well intentioned, but they talked about calling the White House, calling your congressman, which is fine, but all of it can be stopped on a state level, and this is something that's so much overlooked, isn't it?
Oh my, yes. In fact, with the instruction in place over your state legislatures, and amongst those instructions being the command to instruct their U.S. senators or recall them and then hold another popular election for their replacement as per the Constitution's provisions, then you... What with that kind of movement, then you have decentralization of power taking place, and a repositioning of proper government. And state government now, under the UN agenda, is acting more like county government. The state government is meant to look outward and defend its borders and the liberties of people within it without...
Hold that thought just for a second there, Roger. We got to take a break. Folks, you're listening to American Exposé. I'm Darren Gleek, putting in for Kirk Gruner. Our guest is Roger Mundy. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you can hear my voice, you are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. If you would like to continue hearing these programs, there are several ways that you can help. One, you can make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program by going to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there. Two, you can sponsor your favorite program with your business advertising dollars or spend your dollars with those businesses that advertise on your favorite programs. Three, simply call in on live programs and tell them that you are listening on FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Now anyone can do that one. You can find the call-in numbers on our schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. And finally, you can call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address, and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Pam Stegner. Do you want to garden organically, obtain insect control naturally, or care for your pet without harsh chemicals? Biozyme products by Heartland Enterprises are a special blend of living microorganisms and organic substances, providing safe and cost-effective all-natural solutions for the agricultural industry, your home, garden, and lawn care. Organic solutions for lagoons and ponds, even for animals, Biozyme is effective prevention of West Nile disease for both humans and animals. Protect your family from damaging chemicals and disease. Order Biozyme today. Call Heartland Enterprises at 785-628-6435. That's 785-628-6435 or on the web at www.biozymeag.com. That's www.biozymeag.com.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and following the instructions there to support us, or call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the broadcast called American Exposé. Darren Weeks here. I'm sitting in for Chris Gruner tonight. I believe Chris will be back with you tomorrow night. And generally we do this once every couple of weeks. I might be out of town on Monday 2 weeks from now, so I don't know exactly when I'll be back hosting again. I guess we'll find out, and we'll let people know when the time comes. But our guest today is Roger Mundy. And, Roger, I want to thank you again for doing this.
It's a very great pleasure on my part.
I really appreciate it. It's very, very nice and refreshing to have some solutions, because so many times we talk to people about this, all the bad stuff that's going on in the world. And, you know, if we don't ever offer any solutions to the problems that we face, then,
right.
You know, we certainly... It gets very depressing, I guess you might say.
Well, yes, it is. And you know what's interesting is the solutions that are put forward are generally you've got to get active, you've got to come together, you've got to restore your jury rights, et cetera, et cetera. But those who put forward those solutions don't know, perhaps, that they're actually advocating the reinstitution of instruction. That's the name of it. Knowing the name of it gives you immense power, because you can study the history, you can find it in constitutions, and you can find out how very, very powerful it is. Because, you see, the enemy spends untold amounts to control the media, and the reason they do that is because they know that the most powerful force that stands against them is the beliefs of the people. and that if the people understand that they have a right to control their own government, and they have a formal name for it, and a formal way of doing it, then they're undone. Because all they've got is a secondary power, like the purse and the sword, but they'll lose both if the people come together and establish a new commodity script, or alternative ways, or barter, or the people come together and their children all refuse to serve tyranny. So they know the most important thing for them is to control the beliefs of the people.
You know, talking to people, Roger, so many times I try to tell them about what's going on. I try to educate the people around me, and I have a job. It's ironic that I work at a television station because I just hate television. I hate what it's done to the country.
Yeah.
I feel like it's been used more than anything else, probably, to dumb down the population and to get people to not care about what's going on. I mean, people feel like they catch Tom Brokaw or Dan Rather or Peter Jennings or any of the other various networks. We have an infinite supply, it seems like, of garbage that's coming off the satellites and various channels, and yet people have never been more ignorant of the governmental process than they are today.
Yeah.
You know, I guess my question is, how do we talk to people, get them to listen to us, and how do we get them to care about their destiny and about that of their children?
Well, I think there's some models we can follow. You know, there are two very powerful populist movements in American history, and there are many others to look at throughout world history, but in American history we look at a time of the revolutionary period. And even before then, when the colonists came over with no help from the crown, by the way, and they people naturally came together because it was survival. And the similar thing happened in the revolutionary period, where they came together and perceived their own survival was at stake, and they discovered their political powers. And then in the populist movement in the turn of the 19th century, when the farmers across America were being turned into land or serfs on their own land by the mercantilist usury system put upon them, and also during Shays' Rebellion, all these things could be studied by people. If you study the populist movement, you'll see that the people came together out of they were in desperate straits. They had very little money. They give their penny dues, and what they would do, they learned to buy things in bulk together to save money, so they all benefited, and they attempted and were successful at times at selling their commodities, their crops, in together too as a block. And so their standards, their living standards were increased. They began to escape some of the usury and so forth, and they obtained a positive feeling about associating with their neighbors. What's interesting, in Kansas, there were populist meetings. It started in New York, and then it went to Texas and had a big effort there. But when it hit Kansas, it swept through here like wildfire. And the populist movement united all these farmers together under those ways. And it was almost a religious zeal they had. When they had meetings, there used to be like you'd see a trail of wagons coming through Wichita and headed towards Topeka. and you'd see it continuous from horizon to horizon, and there were flags waving on those things, and it was the farmers' cooperative, one name they had, and the populist movement, so forth. And these people managed to throw the Republicans out of office in this state, which is unthinkable in the state capital. And piggybacked upon that, they sent out evangelistic type speakers across all of America, and they were organizing people in the southern states who were under another grinding type of horrid, usurious situation. And chapters were springing up all across America. And this is the power base that Williams Jennings Bryan used to get himself running for president of the United States. And these are just farmers. And they knew less than anybody about the political system. And many were very illiterate, but the Lord rose up speakers and inspired them, and they came together and discovered their powers, their political powers. So what brought them together was a mutual need, and they discovered benefit to one another when they came together and worked together that way. And I think that's where it begins. To me, it seems like we're approaching that time. There's layoffs everywhere. They're shutting down factories right and left. And people are hurting, you know. It seems to be in those times that people rediscover the community, rediscover the power of association and cooperative working with one. It sounds almost communistic, I know, but the basis of a Republican free government is the popular assembly of the people. And that's how we founded our government here. You know, there were states in colonial state legislatures who had the appointed governors appointed by England and the king. And these legislatures sent out begging requests for the people to instruct them on what to do or whether they should declare independence or not. And the popular assemblies in New England grew to enormous sizes, and they commanded those colonial legislatures to declare independence, and those who wouldn't, they replaced with themselves, and they declared independence. So we have those models to look to and learn from history on how to do this. But it looks like a commonality is for the people to come together and discuss their problems, and financially usually is the motivation that does it, and then discover their powers politically. And the key to the political power has a name, and it is instruction. And this is a force like the political philosophers have recognized, that when people know they have that power, they can't be stopped. That you are on the road to a pure republic, which is a dreadful thing to David Hume, because he thought that people were unfit to govern. But, you know, this country became the most prosperous in the world. And it was under that that happened.
You talked a little bit about the populists. I want to come back to that for just a second. That was right around 1892, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
These populists, they stirred up quite a hornet's nest for the bankers. I don't know, are you familiar at all with the Bankers Manifesto?
Refresh my memory.
They talk here, they said, we the bankers must proceed with caution and guard every move made, for the lower order of people are already showing signs of restless commotion. They said prudence will therefore show a policy of apparently yielding to the popular will until our plans are so far consummated that we can declare our designs without fear of any organized resistance. They said organizations in the United States should be carefully watched by our trusted men, and we must take immediate steps to control these organizations in our interest or disrupt them. This is the bankers. This was meant for the rest of the bankers, you know,
right.
Kind of an internal message. It says at the coming Omaha convention, this was the convention of the populists, to be held July 4th, 1892, our men must attend and direct its movement, or else there will be set on foot such antagonism to our designs as may require force to overcome. They said this, at the present time, would be premature. We are not yet ready for such a crisis. Capital must protect itself in every possible manner through combination, that is, conspiracy, and legislation. The courts must be called to our aid, debts must be collected, bonds and mortgages foreclosed as rapidly as possible. When, through the process of law, the common people have lost their homes, they will be more tractable and easily governed through the influence of the strong arm of the government applied to a central power of imperial wealth under the control of the leading financiers. People without homes will not quarrel with their leaders. History repeats itself in regular cycles. The truth is well known. This truth is well known among our principal men who are engaged in forming an imperialism of the world. While they are doing this, the people must be kept in a state of political antagonism. The question of tariff reform must be argued to the organization known as the Democratic Party, and the question of protection with the reciprocity must be forced to view through the Republican Party. By thus dividing voters, we can get them to expend their energies in fighting over questions of no importance to us, except as teachers to the common herd. Thus, by discrete actions, we can secure all that has been so generously planned and successfully accomplished. That was the Bankers Manifesto of 1892, revealed by Congressman Charles Lindbergh Sr. to the U.S. Congress sometime between his term, during his term in 1907, between 1907 and 1917. So, but the interesting thing is that they said this Omaha Convention, which was the convention of the populists, they said we have to control this thing or else there's going to be antagonism to our designs that's going to require us to get tough and use force, and we're not ready to do that. So what you're saying about the populists rung a bell to me when I thought about the Bankers Manifesto.
Yes. See, they knew that the people had it within their power to take over the purse. And they were talking about resorting to force. But you see, if the people understand that too, they won't have enforcers.
Right.
And so, you see, like I'm saying, there's only three powers in any society. It's the pen, the purse, and the sword. And those are just analogies. An analogy, and the strongest form of the pen is the belief of the people. And another form of the pen is the power of the people to instruct their representatives. And all that began to put the international bankers in a panic with a group of farmers that came together to deliberate their problem and decide what to do, to cooperate with one another, to buy and sell together, and then send out from their tiny little dues, from their subsistence living, send out speakers across the U.S. and found chapters all across the U.S. from a group of farmers. And so, the political activists today should understand that this is the source of power. It is the only source of power that we have, and in fact it is the greatest source of power on the planet. There simply is nothing else. And the political activists today, the people who care today, the patriot today, are much more well-versed than these populists were. And they have mastered arts of communication the populists didn't even have. And we could do that and then succeed. And send them packing back. Send them in a virtual retreat to the last corner of the earth and then close that corner down. That is actually, factually, what could happen.
So people have have
know,
to realize
it's never
the power
truly
that
gone
have.
To that extent before, but that doesn't mean anything. And, you know, the alternative looks pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the enemy has declared that it shall own the earth and everything on it and everybody and every thought and every belief, whether you live and die, or when you live, when you die, who you marry, what, how many children, if you get to live, what your job is, all that. They've drawn the line, the battle line, is all or nothing, and I say we accept that challenge. All or nothing, you say, we'll take it all.
There
and
you go.
You get nothing. And we've got the millions on the earth to do it with. So, I think we have a commonality amongst decent people in the world that this could be it. This could be the biggest stupidity they've ever done. Declaring war on the very spirit of humanity, and we've got God on our side. I remember on the radio many years ago, I quoted Rockefeller, who said, the window of opportunity for the New World Order is closing. And I said, guess what? You hear that sound? It just shut. And you've got one option, sir, and that's surrender. And you may be surprised. We might be merciful. So that's the pitched battle we're in. And what we need to know is what to do. And there is only one power we have. And that's, number one is our faith and in our beliefs. And number two is we must take command of our government. And there is a way, and it has a name, and it has worked, and we can make it work better than ever, and we can liberate humanity. So that's all I can say.
Yeah, well, sounds good. Folks, we still have a few minutes left if anyone wants to call in. The number is 1-800-858-6582. 800-858-6582 if you have a question for Roger. And where do you go from here, Roger? What are you presently working on? I regret that your website is not online right now.
Yeah. We're working on a new website. It's not up yet. We're working on fostering sort of like the People's Alliance. Only we're going to do it through the Internet to start with, and then in the physical world, and then continuous research. And my mission is to, my self-appointed mission is to share what God gave to me about this great power. And, you know, what's interesting, if the people come to see they have this power, then they will make every mistake with it that's possible. But the beauty of it is, for every mistake they make, they can correct it, and correct it quickly, and learn from that. And eventually what they will see coming out of this, through the instruction power of the people over their local governments, and the power of the state governments over the U.S. Senate, they will see a decentralization of power. And they'll put the banksters in a panic again. But, you know, the banksters have already planned to eliminate the majority of humanity from the earth.
That's true.
We really have nothing to lose and everything to gain, and only one way of getting there. It takes faith, and you have to come together with your fellows, because what's interesting, you know, we can preempt it and know what we're doing and use this power before they thought we would be forced back together again without any knowledge of what to do. If things get desperate enough, we will come together anyway. Well, let's come together when we know what we're doing.
When you have a chance of making a difference.
Right. And we have a chance even then, but
yeah,
our chance
true.
Is
yeah.
so much more powerful. We come together in faith, pick up our civic duty, learn our political powers, and use it and take command. They may send the armies against us, but they're going to anyway. So
we have so many tools that even the enemy has given us. I mean, we have the internet where we can disseminate large quantities of information and obtain large quantities of information for dissemination. That in and of itself, and we still have the ability to speak out like we are doing tonight.
Yeah.
You know, the time is now. It's now, you know. And, I don't know. I can't stress that enough. You know, if we're going to take back this republic, there's no time like the present.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, Colonel Roberts in the Committee to Restore the Constitution has a good program that's basically very similar to what I'm talking about. And through contact with him, he's began using the word instruction now. When I say to people, I say, don't petition government. Then you're assuming the legal status of a British subject. Petitioning is a begging situation. You're the master of this. You are constitutionally the master. Instruct them. Don't ask them. Command them. And the only way to do that, and the only proper way it can legally be recognized anyway, is from popular assembly. So that means you get together with your friends and neighbors. And you find out what your local government's doing. And you find out about the watershed means you go there and you expose the facilitator as a paid bagman who will try to run you down and insult you and intimidate you and then laugh at him and say, you're paid to do this hack job, but we are the people and we own this water and you don't. You get out of this jurisdiction. And so forth. You know, take over your county governments, your townships. Go down and find what they're doing. Go and meet with your neighbors, discuss it, and expose the corruption. Stand against it. You know, bring all your cars around there and beep your horns, or recall all of them, which has happened here in Kansas. And then network with another, then go up to the state. Begin teaching them of their powers in the union. And, you know, the lawyers will say, well, won't want to admit it, but they believe that those powers don't exist and you're all commercial entity. Well, deny it. Deny it based on the fact that their 14th Amendment is a name of a fraud. Because ask your state legislator. All this is based on the 14th Amendment voluntary citizenship. You want to know more about it, go to Just Bell Eye and read Ralph Winterroot's stuff. But justbelleye.com. But what you need to do, you need to get together in your groups and instruct them that the 14th Amendment's a fraud and you are given rights by God.
Well, hey, Roger, I regret to have to say we're out of time, but hey, thanks a lot for being with us as a guest. I really appreciate it. I respect you very highly, and keep it up in Kansas. Folks, we're out of time. Chris should be back with you tomorrow. Go to AmericanExposé.com, American Show with a K, not a T. Thanks for joining us.
This program on FirstAmendmentRadio.com is much more than entertainment. It is more like an information-packed audio magazine delivered direct to you. Like any magazine, if you don't want to keep getting it, simply unsubscribe by not listening. But you are listening, so now go to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there to make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program. Not only should you subscribe for yourself, but you should give...